Welcome to the Dental Implant Podcast with your host, Pav Kara, your source of knowledge for all things relating to dental implants. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you learned something valuable. I hope.
Folks, welcome back to the next episode of the Dental Implant Podcast. And I'm really excited to have a friend of mine joining us today. And if you think that I'm a titanium nerd, this guy's on the same level as well. So whatever you want to call him, he's absolutely superb with full arch stuff. And we need to make sure I'm getting the chronology of this correct. So Dave, you'll correct me in a second if I get this wrong. You were a qualified technician first, then you went back and did dentistry, and then you went back and did your M-Clin dent in prosthodontics. Is that correct?
Yeah, so almost there. So yeah, technician first over back in Toronto, then dentistry at Newcastle over here in the UK.
Yeah.
I did a master's in implants at work, and then I did an M-Clin dent at Kings.
Oh, so, sorry, yeah. Mate. Dropped an MSc there for you, sir. So yeah, we're talking to another titanium nerd effectively, okay? And what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about FP3, folks, okay? And the reason why I wanted to talk about FP3 is you guys know that I've done a lot of it. Dave's done it as well. So we want to share with you our experiences, mainly Dave's experience, and because Dave has done a lot of pioneering of the guided stuff in FP3.
Yeah.
And to say that you've got it down to a fine art is a bit of an understatement. So Dave, over to you, mate. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah.
And just tell us about your FP3 journey.
I think, so it kind of all started, I was working with a dentist over in Canada who was a specialist prosthodontist. And this was now 20 years ago. And I was basically his technician. And he was doing a lot of kind of really, place implants, leave them for 6 months, expose them, classic analog style of restorative workflow, put on a temporary, adjust the occlusion, copy that, go to a framework triangle, all the things, that we would kind of consider a little bit overkill nowadays. And I just saw at that time how much time it took to rehabilitate these patients. I started my journey in the implants, as everyone does, starting with single, starting to increase your surgical skill, increase your prosthodontic skill set. And as I was moving through it, I quickly got into the digital workflow. And I saw that there was a huge advantage to guided surgery. And then, things started rolling and I started doing guides on my own in my lab in 2015. And we started kind of progressing how we deliver the guides to the patient was the very first thing. So do we go to tooth? Do we go to bone? Do we go to soft tissue? And reading the research and considering my own kind of like feedback of what I was getting results within this in the surgery, we kind of evolved that pathway. So one of the biggest problems for me was that every time I went and saw any style of analog surgery, it was too unpredictable. People go into the surgery, they have some idea of what they want as an outcome, but they couldn't deliver kind of a more, a plan to face kind of result. And that's where I really wanted to expand on and learn more and basically get better at doing. And I'm a planner. If I'm going to go into something, I want to know exactly what I'm going to get from as an outcome. So that really is where I kind of took the guided surgery on in my own environment, with my own team, developing it with my own kind of within my own clinic. So that's kind of been the evolution of why I did it and why I've been doing it. With regards to FP3, which, this podcast is all about, in my working environment and the patients that I see, most of my patients are quite dilapidated. They're quite debilitated in that, significant tooth loss, significant periodontal disease. and or they have a few teeth of which in between the teeth, the bone is highly resorbed. So it's quite difficult to, in my opinion, to restore those style of cases in an FP1 style and get a good aesthetic outcome. Because what inevitably happens is you have an uneven bony ridge, which then results in uneven prosthodontic interface between the tissue and the proso. So again, my preference in those scenarios is to create a level plane, figure out my ideal restorative space based on my material science, and then go from there.
So just on this as well, this is one of the big mistakes I see a lot of people make. So when I get revision work that gets sent to me, because it's like, Pav, I tried this, something keeps breaking. I've got cases where, you know, before I understood it well, I made this mistake as well. We always hear this, but we don't understand the importance of it always, but it becomes more apparent when you start doing full arch work. And that's prosthetically driven planning.
Is it?
So I see a lot of people where they go, okay, I'm going to go FP3. I'm going to do an acrylic wrap.
Is it?
They don't do the alveoplasty. They don't level out the bone.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is you end up with inadequate prosthetic space.
Yeah.
Things constantly fracture.
Yeah.
But sometimes the only way to remedy those is to switch up your materials.
Yeah.
And use something stronger like zirconia, which comes at a significant added cost. And this trickles back to planning wasn't right to start with.
Yeah.
If you want to do FP3 and you want to do an acrylic wrap, what space do you need? You know, and it needs to be not only what space do you need, where do you want the teeth to end up? And that's where you plan the alveoplasty.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that all starts in the console. And then once you gather all the appropriate good quality data to allow you then take it back to the lab and plan backwards from where, essentially where the future inside the ledge position is going to be. Because the reality is most of these patients, like I said, will have teeth in absolutely the incorrect position, right? Because, you know, they'll be splayed, they'll have drifted, they'll have been worn, the vertical dimension may have closed. You know, all these things will have occurred over the lifetime of this patient. We have to figure where do they need to be back when they were 20.
Yes.
You know, and of course, we're never going to put them back to how they look when they were 20. But the idea is that where did God initially want those teeth? And we kind of work from that basis backwards. So, yeah. You know, the data sets that I gather for this is basically CT scan in an occlusion. So I like my patients in occlusion in the CT scan. That's kind of like my master articulator. You know, that's my master models almost. Intraoral scans in occlusions. 5 photos. So a retracted view, a smiling view, and a lip at rest view, and then the profile. So smiling and profile. And those 3 first photos basically allow me to align over top of each other and stitch together in a design software such as ExoCAD 3 Shape to allow me to do the smile design workflow. And then the added one is, people have this, is a face scan where we can bring that in as well and we can integrate that into everything. And then once we know that, we can then start setting up the ideal tooth position for that patient. And once we've figured the ideal tooth position, we can work backwards and figure out where our implant positions want to live.
So 2 things I want to say there as well, Dave, is firstly, let's clarify. When you say you want the CBC in occlusion,
yeah,
you want it in occlusion or at the vertical dimension you want to set up.
Yeah.
Basically, you are recording your CBC in the occlusal position, the jaw relation that you want to set everything up. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So my day of surgery that I want them to be set at will be based on the CBC scan. So for instance, if we have a class 2 day 2 patient and they're overclosed, we need them propped up in that scan to the vertical dimension that we require for the day of surgery.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense because, I mean, if you're going to, ordinarily we do that on wax ribs, right? So
yeah.
We get enter stage, so you're just basically doing that digitally.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's so much we can do. We can do a lot of this stuff with the digital articulators and software such as ExoCAD and stuff like that. But after a certain amount of increase, what I found, increasing kind of more than 2 to 3 millimeters, the digital articulator becomes no longer effective. It doesn't accurately relate the condylator angles and stuff that allow us to be able to go from a completely digital workflow, no models, no articulator, to the mouth on day of surgery and have minimal amounts of occlusal adjustments.
And the other thing that I wanted to mention on this, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to ruin some protracted courses here.
Sure.
Smile design and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
People get hung up on smile design. They'll go on 3-4 day courses. And the best way to think about smile design, denture setup. That's all that it is. Pretend the patient doesn't have any teeth. Where do you want the teeth to end up?
Yep.
The main position that we need to look at is the upper central incisors. Once you have those in the position that you want them relative to the face,
yep,
the rest of them fall in terms of certain dimensions, certain proportions going backwards. That's kind of it. People get hung up on smile design a bit too much. Just think of them as dentures. That's a tip I'll give to everybody listening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, prosthodontist hasn't changed in 150 years. Right?
Yeah.
People's teeth fit in their faces in a certain way.
Yeah.
You look at anatomical relationships based on tooth positions and figure out where things want to be.
Yeah.
In 1985, Meech actually did an examination of about 10,000 patients. And they looked at where the incisal edge position was relative to the lip at rest and compared that to the lateral and canine. And actually, the most invariable tooth in the mouth is the canine. Plus or minus 1 millimeter to the lip line.
Yeah.
The central incisor actually can be plus or minus 7 millimeters.
Yes.
So interestingly, the central incisor, actually, when you look at that, it isn't that reliable. However, we know that generally the central incisor and the canine live on the same plane.
Yeah.
So we work from the central because it's there and easy, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. The other, so in a moment, Dave, I'm going to get on to other aspects as well. And before I forget, because I've got a habit of getting waylaid, we're going to talk about analog workflow versus digital workflow, kind of like how you progress over your career. But the other thing I wanted to mention as well, a lot of mistake I see a lot of people making this type of stuff is when they do this type of work, if the patient is skeletally class 3 or skeletally class 2, they'll push the incisors to class 1.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that we should be doing that. Okay.
Yeah.
If you've got a posterior crossbite, be careful if you're correcting that crossbite.
Because
quite often you'll end up with a shelf over the top of the
alveolus. Yeah.
Or all of a sudden the patient's biting their cheek or their tongue left, right, center. So what I normally say is that if a patient is skeletally a class 2, you need to respect that. And even if you're not correcting to a full class 2, it's got to be a little bit of a pseudo class 2, if that makes sense. Now, taking somebody skeletally class 2 and making them into a complete class 1 can actually introduce problems.
Yeah.
Biggest thing that we need to correct is overbite. If you've got overbite and you're locking things in place, everything's going to smash. And again, that's where a lot of people trip themselves up as well. So again, another couple of tips
Well, absolutely. Yeah. You know, again, I go back to this whole age that the teeth and the skeletal classification are there for a reason. That patient's been built like that. By changing that, it's going to hinder a whole bunch of things downstream for sure.
So Dave, analog versus digital,
which is better, or what do you want to talk about?
Where you started, how you progressed into digital, where you found the drawbacks of analog, drawbacks of digital, that type of stuff.
So I guess the my first workflow was again purely analog. I was placing the implants with guides, but then I was restoring analog. So this was before, not before intraoral scanners completely, but before intraoral scanners became more widespread. So I would do the same workflow that lots of people are continuing to do now, but has been tried and tested. So I was taking a preliminary impression of my restorations. I was getting a drill agent made, pre-sectioned. I was then placing it, gluing it together and picking it up for a master model. That would then get poured. I would then choose some occlusal rims, reestablish my vertical dimension, usually with a face bolt so we could mount it correctly. And then we go to some type of triang. That triang would then get assessed and reassessed, and maybe even another try-in. Usually that material will be PMMA straight to multi-unit fixture. Once I was happy and the patient was happy with the prosthodontic envelopes, I would then convert that to the restorative material of choice I was using at the time, of which I have used them all. Everything from denture wraps to zirconia straight to interface to zirconia on tie sleeves to zirconia on bars, PMMA straight to interface, PMMA on bars, Creoline, composite wraps, thimble bridges, you name it, I've tried it.
What's your go-to now?
My go-to nowadays would be bar and PMMA sleeve. And the reason for this, and this is a relatively new new restoration.
Sorry to interrupt. I just lost you there for a second. So okay. In case we didn't catch that. Say that again for me, please.
So it would be a titanium bar with a PMMA sleeve. And the reason for this and why I like this material choice is 95% of the time I'm choosing an FP3 style of restoration. It's just my patient base. It's just how I've been trained and the outcomes I find I can reproduce well. One of the things after, and you'll know this, after doing many, many cases over your career, things break.
Fine.
And we must have a contingency to be able to fix these breakages easily. So with a PMMA bar sleeve, one of the things that we're able to do, that PMMA sleeve is a file, an SDL file. I can push a button on a mill and reproduce that very, very easily over and over again, which means I can then rebond that PMMA sleeve to the metal bar. And it creates a relatively cost-effective repair mechanism rather than repairing. It's kind of like replacing.
Good, because that's one of the techniques that I use as well. So I'm glad we're on the same page there. Yeah. With regards to the guided side.
Yeah.
So let's delve a little bit deeper into there, Dave. You know, what are most other people doing? How is what you're doing different?
Yeah.
What problems did you have as you were working out your workflow, if that makes sense? Because I mean, you look at it online now and everybody's like, oh, do this course. You know, this guide is perfect and it will solve all your problems. This guide is perfect, it will solve all your problems.
Mm-hmm. Look,
or I'm not a fan of one thing is going to solve all of your problems.
Yeah.
That to me is along the lines of a biomaterial company coming to you and turning around and saying, this one material, you can use it 100% of cases and it will work 100% of the time.
Okay? Yeah.
The only biomaterial that does that is autogenous bone. And even then, you've got to be careful about which technique you use, okay? Everything that we do is a tool, okay? Everything that we use is a tool. So as you've developed your tool, what problems did you have along the lines and how did you fix it?
Yeah, so I think the first question of where I am now is in guided surgery is why I wanted to get there. And one of the things I hated about full arch stuff is converting a denture or converting some type of prosthesis on the day of surgery that was nothing like what I planned. So I wanted to figure out some way of being able to say, I'm going to design this. How do I get to the patient in such a way that it is as close to as what I designed? And one of my colleagues actually came to me with this problem and said, hey, I want to be able to make a guide and be able to deliver a restoration straight to fixture full arch. Can you do it? And I said, you know what? I don't know. I'll try. And so I got to work on it. So over about six, 8 month period, I was working on it. And one of the key steps to all that was actually the fixo implant. One of the big problems in guided surgery is there isn't a very good link between the software of the guides and the software of the CAD. And it just so happened to be that fixo had this link. And I was able to hack it at the time to be able to deliver us a guide that could place a fixo implant and then take a bridge that was prefabricated and just screw it onto the multi-units. That for me was game changing. because I could now basically take my surgeries that were taking, let's say, 3 hours down to literally an RJ an hour.
So just to clarify for those listening, you go guided surgery, you place a fixo implant by Oxy, you have a prosthesis pre-made, and you just screw it in.
Screwed it. And I have done hundreds of them, thousands of them. Over the last 4 years. And it works extremely predictably. It's extremely predictably. And also, it does create a sense of, everyone's always hung up about the surgery and they're really concentrating on the surgery. They get all that done and then they're like, oh, shit, I now have to put this bridge on this thing and give this patient some teeth, right? Which is what the patient actually came in for. So having all that kind of pre-ready to go is a huge advantage, which has been fantastic. And now it's all about delivering. It's about creating guides that are able to deliver that next level of accuracy.
Yeah. So you've basically been tinkering and figuring this out for very, very, very many years. It sounds like you've tried a lot of things and you had any catastrophic failures along the way, because that's how you learn.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I first started, I was doing a lot of guides soft tissue, which was, hindering the accuracy of the placement of the first guide. I was doing stuff that was, hybrids of pilot guides, fully guided, different types of stackable guides. So guides that went, first guide that would go on, put my pinholes in, take that guide off. Another guide would locate to those pinholes. Massively inaccurate. And then, my kind of go-to now is that I basically put the guide to bone everywhere, every time. So to the palate, which is a very nice base to be able to put a guide to. And then, the mandible as well, which is usually a really good place to put a guide to. It takes more surgical skill. There's no doubt,
Right, because you need to deglove the mandible or the maxilla to do that, don't you?
You do. Yeah. So, which means the patients have, slightly more post-op swelling. They're going to have slightly more post-op pain. But I think the outcome generally for them is better because the accuracy is improved.
I mean, for me, managing perioperative swelling comes down to your perioperative pharmaceutical protocol as well.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that, people will normally wait until the day of surgery, 3 grams of amoxicillin and, just start on your painkillers as soon as you can afterwards. There's far better ways of managing perisurgical pain and swelling that's beyond the scope of this podcast, but I may do that on another one. So that's just So, okay, Dave. So you've figured out a way to go fully guided and have the bridge pre-made down to multi-unit interface.
Yep.
The healing period goes through, and what are the next stages for you? Because at the moment, I see a lot of arguments, on Facebook.
Yeah,
photogrammetry is the best. Okay, and I see a lot of people. Oh no, you have this new. I think it's from Shining Dental, the intraoral equivalent to. And then you have other things like people say, put composite runs between the soft tissue between the scan flags. There's reverse scanning coming out, things along those lines. I'm still an advocate, and I say this as well. It is absolutely 100% possible, and I promise you this because I've done it a lot, to do your definitive prosthetics with an analog solution, in 2 half-hour visits.
Sure.
And I can do it. I do it all the time,
Sure.
So I'm under the assumption that you're not really using the analog workflows anymore. So tell me about the digital workflows that you like.
Yeah. So on the day of surgery, digital equipment, I guess you say, is an intraoral scanner. So Trios is what I've been using currently. We've used a Medit and some type of photogeometry. So we're using iMetric right now.
Yeah.
And so on the day of surgery, after the implants are placed with the flap still open, I take my photogeometry. So basically my master model of my implantations. I close everything. I put the prosthesis on. I then allow them to heal for 4 weeks That allows the soft tissues to kind of calm down, everything ready for the next phase. The next phase is usually about an hour appointment in which upper and lower intraoral scans are taken. The prostheses are an occlusion. The prostheses are removed. Healing caps are placed, or specialized scan flags for the intraoral scans of the entire soft tissue. Those are then overlaid onto the iometric scans to allow us to then fabricate the next stage of the restorations. Now, whether that be we need another temporary prosthesis to dial in changes that we require, or we just go straight to flat, I would say is probably the ratio on that is probably, I would say 90% we're going straight to final, and then about 10% we didn't quite get it right in the initial planning stages, and or we have a very, you know, complicated patient and they want another kind of temporary to kind of revise things slightly. I would prefer to do that, dial it in, get the patient happy before going to the next stage.
Yeah, I mean, you want to get to a point where, you know, where your instructions to the lab are, cool, copy what we've got.
Yeah.
You know, so I've got one case at the moment where this lovely lady came to see me a few months ago and she was like, I keep going to different places. I need a full mouth of implants. And she did. She had a handful of teeth left.
Yeah.
Ravaged by perio. And she was like, I don't want to have titanium. She goes, everybody refuses to do zirconia. So I placed a total of 15 zirconia implants for her.
Well,
I wasn't completely happy with the temporary bridges, but I said to her she had to put up with it through the healing phase.
Sure.
And the main thing for her is her daughter's getting married in October. In fact, she's getting married on Monday, I believe.
Yep.
And she was like, I just need a nice set of teeth for that. And I said, you're not going to have your final teeth then, but you'll have a new set of temporaries. And we fit her with these new set of temporaries and they look beautiful. She's happy. Occlusion's absolutely perfect. Now, my instructions to my technician are copy it. You know, this is the shade that we want. We're moving from PMMA to zirconia. Because we're moving to zirconia, thin it out even more on the lingual aspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but she's happy. But what I'm expressing to those listening is, you know, there are some small changes that we can make and go straight to definitive. But if there's big changes that need to be made, don't take the risk. Don't take the risk. Just get another temporary made.
Were those solid pieces? Yeah, with like a built-in
single piece, yeah. So there were Breedent one piece, because I know that there are two piece systems out there, but I'm concerned about the screws that they use, because quite often they're carbon fiber or there's some sort of weird thing, and it's just like, you know, what's the connection like? I was like, you know what, zirconia single piece, push fit restoration, tiniest amount of cement, and they'll be good to go.
Yeah.
And again, I deliberately over-engineered the system. That's why I put in sort of 15, 16 implants, not per jaw, in total.
Yeah.
Yeah. Purely because of how zirconia ages. And I was like, okay, you know, if one of the implants doesn't take, we still have options to, or we should still have options to continue. And, you know, it's going really well for her. And, you know, they're nice implants. They're really nice implants.
Sure.
Okay. So, Dave, what about, what would you say is the best way for those to operate who don't have iometric, who don't have photogrammetry?
Yeah, I would.
What's the best way to do that?
Now, I know there's tons of clinicians out there using intraoral scans for their master model. So scan flags, master models. In my experience in working with it and have done a number of cases, a lot of them actually, the passivity isn't there in my hands. Particularly because I'm placing a lot of pterygoids and the stretch between the implant that affords the pterygoid is just too long. Yeah, it's just too long to get the accuracy along the soft tissue mapping, that makes sense. So my opinion, I don't think it creates a passive enough restoration for a file in the intraoral scan arena. So I would go back to analog ways. There's two options. You make a jig with Durolay, or you pick it up with stone, good old stone.
Yeah.
You know, and those, you know, those are reliable methods of creating an accurate master model. One technique I was doing is on the day of surgery, I would have a secondary bridge made with big holes, and I would use that and reline those big holes with cylinders and then take a soft tissue impression of it underneath after I've closed. And then wait, and then reline that again in 6 weeks' time or whatever when the tissue has kind of receded, and then use that, and the bite gets teeth, right? So I could use all that in one piece and bring it back to the articulator again.
To those listening, just rewind 30 seconds, 40 seconds, listen to that again, because that is genius. And to be honest, mate, that's one of the ways that I do it as well.
Yep.
You know, there are so many ways of doing it. And, you know, I always express that. Because my thing is accelerated healing protocols. And it's not a case of doing it fast for the sake of doing it fast, but it's doing it in a timely fashion. Mm-hmm. Because patients want it done. They want it finished. They don't want to come back for 20 appointments.
Yeah. But
is if you can get the same or better outcome in fewer visits, why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah.
So it's constantly thinking about this as well. And it's the same when I'm decarbonizing implants. You know, it's one of the reasons why I do it is purely because I know that I get accelerated healing and better quality healing around the implants as well. Now, that doesn't mean to say that I don't have failures. I still have failures.
Yeah.
But what I do know is the quality of the bone around my implants is elevated significantly. For something that takes 60 seconds. And psychologically, for me, I really like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm getting really nice, stable bone levels around these as well. So, Dave, I've got another question for you. Okay, so we spoke about the OxyFixo implant, which is a beautiful implant. It's an angle-corrected tissue-level implant, one piece.
Yeah.
It's a great way to manage oxidative stress. It behaves like a tissue level implant. Very, mm-hmm. very nice indeed. Not available in the US as far as I'm aware. So what are our US and colleagues abroad? What do they need to do? You know, do you have options for those, or is it a matter of going back to stackables and creating something where, as you said, you can do cylinder pickup on the day? Because in my mind, there's nothing wrong with doing cylinder pickup on the day as well.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, cylinder pickup on the day, it works. It's been working for a long, long time. My issue with it is that you're creating a whole bunch of holes in the restoration that needs to be there for a certain period of time. Once you create a hole in the material, it's crack propagation. And I was finding that I was getting more fractures associated with those types of restorations than not. The alternative is you reinforce it with some type of titanium frame or some type of easy bar or something within it. But then that takes a whole bunch of, you know, laboratory time to kind of process all that for the patient while they're sitting around bleeding in your surgery, you know, or bleeding in your waiting room. When really what you want to do is say, here's your restoration, go home, recover.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I hurt you, kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, see them back in a relatively easy manner. So guys over in the States, you know, I guess the thing is talk to the software engineers and stuff. Start making the links between the implants so we can start delivering this stuff in, you know, an easier way. You know, one potential way is, you know, particularly actually in Blue Sky Bio, is you can add tie bases in. So tie bases can be added and exported out, which means that you technically have some way of being able to put a tie base direct to fixture. They don't have the same way of doing it direct to a multi-unit, which direct to fixture makes it a lot more difficult to be able to plan these implants because things have to be a lot more parallel.
It's, you know, David, it's really interesting. And it goes back to that thing is what I've really enjoyed about chatting with you is it's not, one approach fixes everything. It goes back to what we originally started saying. Everything that we use is a tool. And the question then becomes is, are we using the right tool for the job?
Yeah.
And if part of the equipment that we require for that tool to be effective is missing, then we have to consider other alternatives in order to give the best outcomes for our patients.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a learning process through the stages of your career. You know, I did stuff, you know, 10 years ago that I look back on and think, oh my God, what was I thinking? But I only learned that it was no good because it was failing in my hands. Right. And, you know, failure is a consequence of, you know, hopefully eventually will be some success. That's the inevitability of it.
I mean, it's even as far as, you know, people make the assumption that, you know, you're using photogrammetry, therefore everything's going to drop into place.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of people don't realize is there's a certain technique that you're supposed to use with photogrammetry. And if you're using the wrong technique, it's the accuracy drops.
Yeah,
it's not just that. Is even with angle corrections, even with multi units or with fixo, which are single piece, is if you have, and I'll get your opinion on this, but what I found, Dave, is a 15 degree divergence in implants, either anterior, posteriorly, or across arch, generally not a problem. Okay. Once it hits about 20 degrees, you need to start opening up the interfaces. Anything beyond that, generally tend to find it's harder to get the bar to drop into place.
Indeed.
And I think this is one thing that a lot of people miss out on, is they're so focused on getting the implants into the bone. It's just kind of like, actually, you know what? How does the parallelism of all the implants relate to each other?
Yeah.
Because if they're all parallel, the bar's going to drop in and out of place. And again, I've had my fingers burnt where, you know, I've used coaxes in the past. And, you know, when I was less experienced, I angle corrected the coaxes in the wrong direction. So instead of improving the divergence of angles, I made it worse.
Yes.
And we managed to get around it, you know, without having to remove the implant by, you know, planning path of insertion, opening up interfaces.
Yeah.
But again, if that was my, you know, we get these ones that occasionally you'll get these big lessons where it's just like, okay, I'll never forget that now.
Yeah.
And for me, that was like, you know what? The implants need to be as parallel as possible for the bar to be passive. Would you agree with that 15 to 20 degree, or have you noticed something different in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's all relative to the geometry of the multi-unit you're fitting to.
But the width and the height of the multi-unit therefore plays a role on the, in the path of insertion as well.
Correct. Yeah, correct. So currently I'm using a Fixo, which have a relatively short and quite a divergent platform. So the path of insertion draw on it is, I think it's 30 degrees, which is quite good.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about it is, though, is I actually that doesn't really matter to me, because everything that I've done is going to be planned beforehand. So I'm looking at all these, you know, the inter-implant angulations to determine where we are. And you're absolutely right. I generally don't go over 25 degrees. And the particular reason for that is that not many metal milling machines can go past that.
Yeah.
So we need to be able to restore these things in the end. So if we can't actually physically mill it, then we're planning for failure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, of course you can mill sections, weld them and stuff like that. But, you know, let's try, the idea is to try to stay away from that. If we can pre-plan these angulations, then why not? But I absolutely hear you. If you're in the midst of a surgery, and you're, you know, everything's happening, you don't have a really great idea of where your implant angulations are, you can really easily get caught up, for sure.
And this, again, is the benefit of guided. You know, if you're using a denture replica and you're going fully freehand and analog, unless that's on your mind, you are just trying to get the implant in decent AP spread.
Yeah.
It's very easy in the heat of the surgery to miss that. You know, if you've done something and the patient's bleeding, or, you know, the patient's sedated, but the sedation's not working well, it just stresses you out. So by going guided, everything's pre-planned.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it'll be the cases where there's limited amount of bone, where you're stretching the envelope of where the implants can get to, because you've got to get these implants into the patient. And that's where you generally get, well, I've been caught up.
And one thing I would say to anybody listening, and this is what, you know, when I spoke to Nick Fahey, this is what he said as well, is, you know, pick and choose your cases. You know, start off with an easy case. You know, if you want to do this type of work, don't start off with something that's, you know, a palatal approach. Don't start off with a class C, class D maxilla. Because it's, you know, you're asking, you want a nice, simple class A, class B maxilla, class B mandible. Make it nice and easy for yourself. And as you get used to it, then you can increase the level of complexity.
I would take that even to the next level. I would start and say, choose the right patient, as in personality.
Get mentored. Mentoring.
Absolutely. And get mentored. You know, the patient that you're able to say, listen, these are my first two cases. I want to tell you my experience, and this is very limited, but I have, you know, paths or someone like me on hand that have a little bit more experience that will be able to help. Those patients that are reasonable about that, you will have better outcomes, no doubt. If you're looking for the patient that needs the God wand to fix them, those are the problems.
So what I'd say on that as well is, you know, obviously, you know, I mentor. I know you do mentoring as well. I get a lot of people that turn around and say to me, Pav, I'm not interested in mentoring. You know, it's too expensive. Cool, fine, not a problem. Let me tell you something that happened to me 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, something like that. Okay. I had a guided case.
Yep.
Full arch with the prosthesis pre-made to interface.
Yep. Okay.
And it was all planned and I was really happy with it. And I put the base plate in and I took all of the teeth out. And it wasn't until all the teeth were taken out that I realized that the bone was so soft that the base plate just came out. So now the patient's got no teeth and I've got a moving base plate and I've got a prosthesis made to interface. Okay. Here's the thing. I managed to get the implant in and I managed to get that prosthesis in as well. And it works quite well. But to say that it was stressful is an understatement.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I managed to do it is because I've messed things up so many times before in the past and I've had help people bailing me out. I knew what I could do and what I couldn't do. So when more experienced people like myself and Dave turn around and say, you know what, mentoring is absolutely gold, we're not saying it because we're touting for business. Because to be honest, I'm very busy. Dave's very busy. You know, we enjoy helping people. We enjoy helping, you know, progress other people's careers. But more importantly, we're trying to teach you how to do it properly so you don't get your fingers burnt like what we do.
Yeah.
And that's what a good mentor does, is they teach you and they will teach you from their experience so that you don't have to make the same mistakes that they made. Which means that as you progress in your career and you're teaching the next generation, you can teach another level beyond what we can do. That's how it progresses.
Yeah.
And this is what Prof. Brandemark used to say as well. He said, I want my students to be better than me, because if they're not, how is the science going to progress?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I wish I had more people like you when I was going through this, because, you know, it was very much kind of like you were a little bit left on your own. You know, you did your implant training. I had a mentor at the time. I did as many implants as I could with them. But then you kind of like, oh, okay, pushed out into the real world a little bit. And I definitely didn't have as much full arch training around me as there is now available, for sure. I was making, you know, we were making a lot of this stuff up, especially with the guides. You know, I was really making a lot of it up at the time because I was trying to solve a problem that I had with my own clinical experience. And so I was experimenting with the technical side of the guides.
And now we have a solution.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, now we have a solution. Yes, there are still bugs that need to be worked out of it, because ideally what we want to do is we want the guides to be so accurate that we don't even need to bother with photogrammetry. We don't need to bother with any verification jigs. So there is always room for improvement. There's always room for improvement. And I always say that, you know, I did a podcast with Bill Schaefer, you know, about a month ago, something like that. And it was cautionary to turn around and say to people, look, you just got to tread carefully. Because the way that patients are at the moment is, if things don't go according to plan, they will come after you, you know. So you just need to be careful. But with the right training, with the right mentor, this is what we're expressing. With the right training, with the right mentoring, and a little bit of luck, you know, I wasn't born a surgeon. Everything that I do is a learned skill. Everything that you do, mate, is a learned skill. So if we can learn it, you can learn it. You know, I spent a lot of time investing in my own education, in my own skills. And it's like I was speaking with Ali Virani last time as well. You know, you can't expect to get the benefits without putting the effort in first. So make sure that effort goes in. And the rest of it will come in time. That's my word of advice for those listening.
Okay. For sure.
So Dave, this has been really fascinating. So thank you very much for your time today.
Pleasure. Yeah, I know. It's been great. It's been a while since I've been able to catch up.
Yes, I know. It's been a couple of years since we met. We'll have to meet up for dinner sometime, I think. So for those listening, if they wanted to reach out to you to learn a little bit more about what you do,
Do you have Instagram? Have you got a website where people can contact you?
Yeah. So the company that's producing, so that I'm a director of, that runs all the guided surgery service, is called Go2Guide. So that's Go2Guide. You can email me at david@go2guide.co.uk, or find us on Instagram, Facebook, all the stuff. Basically, if you type in guided surgery, you're going to find me or find Go2Guide to be able to get in touch. And we're doing everything from stackable guides, single guides, any implant system that you're using. It doesn't have to be fixa or oxy implants. We can make a guide basically for any implant.
And the nice thing is, as we mentioned right at the beginning, you are speaking to somebody who is a technician, qualified dentist. He's done a master's degree in implants, and he's done an MClin dent in prosthodontics as well. So basically, if he messes up, David, yeah. If you mess up, you can get a proper telling off, because there's zero for you and your team effectively. Okay,
so yeah.
David, thank you so much for your time today.